so many ways of considering the course of art, ideas, painters, places. Here's a new one, a new book, Blooms and Brushstrokes. And that takes us through a history of Australian art, flower by flower, one flower at a time. There's another distinguishing feature here. It's the product of a mother and daughter authorial team, Penelope and Tansy Curtin. They have put this exquisite volume together. Thanks, you two, for coming in.
Thanks for having us on the show.
Great pleasure.
This begins with some 18th century transplants of both people and blooms, I guess we could say. Is this the beginning of this story?
That's right. We're obviously looking at, you know, Australian colonial history in from the beginning of the book and looking at those very early botanical illustrations, works by people like Joseph Lycett, of course, convict artist, and what they were doing when they came to Australia and how they were experimenting with representation of what was essentially a very alien landscape for them and very unusual floral sort of landscape as well. So we haven't really tried to focus too much on botanical illustrations because that's a whole other area.
Yes.
Of art history and scientific history. And
our next book.
That's, oh no.
keep one in reserve.
That's right.
But this is the thing, Penelope, it is a wonderful revelation. Once you see this, once you see this put together, you suddenly realise the significance of the flower and its pervasiveness in so much art.
Well, actually, when I was writing my part of the introduction, I came across something written by an English commentator, and he talked about how in works of art, in books of poetry, and in works of literature, always lots of flowers, but they never say what the flowers are.
And that's it goes too to the role of the flower in the painting. It can be compositional, it can be decorative, it can be allegorical, it can do so many things.
That's right, and our job as the viewer is to make those interpretations. And I think that's what's, you know, we can interpret what the artists have meant by it, but also what we glean from it today in a different context.
Who really surprised you in this as a user of flowers, as an Australian artist?
Well, I think what is, obviously, there's lots of elements of this story. There's a story of women and flowers, and I think that's a really interesting element because, you know, particularly with Australian modernism, and it was the women that really took up the modernist sort of aesthetic and often through flowers, like Thea Proctor and Margaret Preston. And, of course, in many ways, because they were women, that work was not necessarily as held as highly as some of the male artists of the period.
And it had flowers, therefore it's decorative.
Exactly right, exactly right.
And therefore it's a lesser work.
That's right. And you think of the way that someone like Preston, who used the humble flower as to create a whole movement in Australia. She's an incredibly important artist. But because of her gender and because of that decorative element of it, her work for a long time was disregarded and not perhaps considered in the same way as some of those male artists of the time.
Who did actually paint flowers? Like William Dobell.
Well, that's true, of
William
course,
Dobell, yes. We've got a work in there of Joshua Smith, and he's got a red carnation. And that's very interesting anyway because the red carnation is actually red. Carnation stands for the labour movement. Now, whether he knew that or not is another thing. But also George Lambert.
Lambert, Streeton, Roberts.
Beautiful work of poppies.
Going back to Preston, and you make the point in the introduction to the book too of how there is, and she is the obvious example of this, of artists who became known for their work with flowers. Mm. And I guess she also had the compounding sin of dealing with a lot of native blooms in her work.
And the appropriation of Indigenous iconography and culture. Mm. And that obviously is a really big thing to discuss about Preston's work because she did certainly appropriate Indigenous symbols in her work. And while at the time she was doing that to raise the profile of Aboriginal art, of course we know today that was not the right thing to do.
But that was very much the feeling of those mid-century
exactly
moderns, that they were exploring that culture and
exactly
thought to be doing a...
Well, exactly. She had the best
of
intentions.
Yeah.
However, of course, you know, at the time with a culture that was so heavily squashed by society, to then appropriate that imagery was really inappropriate.
We've talked about that sort of mid-century modern period. Is there another period in which the flower is dominant, is a very strong force?
Well, I think what we've really realised is that the flower's never waned. You know, you look at that whole history of Australian art, and the flower always has a role, whether it might be as an element within an interior portrait, such as, you know, George Bell or Bernard Hall, one of those beautiful works, or like today, you look at some of those contemporary artists.
Mm. Christian Thompson's
an incredible Indigenous artist who's done beautiful works, reclaiming.
Where the flower is utterly dominant in those works.
Exactly.
And his eyes are gleaming through.
Yes.
And, of course, the cover with Polixeni Papapetru's work.
The artist gardener is also an interesting thing. I mean, artists take a very keen interest in the world around them quite often. And grow it as well, have a real intimacy with it.
Well, that's right. I mean, you can see that in works by people like Hilda Rix-Nicholas.
And Lucy Cullerton.
Who lived in very similar places. Lucy still lives there in
the Monero.
And, the fact that the garden becomes the inspiration, of course, the great artist we think of is Claude Monet and Giverny, and the role that Giverny played as a source of inspiration for his work. And, you know, I think we can really realise that that kind of natural but controlled environment is still such an important part of art history.
It's an exquisite thing. I asked before about a favourite in it, but I've got
a favourite.
Oh, okay, do tell.
Because my daughter's called Tansy.
Yes.
I wanted to call her Pansy, but I was forbidden
to call.
You
stayed your hand.
My husband wouldn't allow it. And so I love the flower Pansy to this very day. And so there are two Pansy works in there. There's one by Bessie Davidson, which is really beautiful, which is in a private collection. And there's another one by Henry Short. It's in the State Library of Australia, and it's commemorating the Birkenwills expedition, and it's a huge still life, like in the tradition of the Dutch still life, but all sorts of other elements. It's got an urn commemorating Birkenwills, but it's got a tiny little heartsease pansy in it. It's just beautiful. It's a beautiful work.
See, that's an interesting thing where you can develop an empathy for a painting or a work of art because of your affection for an element of it, in this case a flower.
That's right.
It is a magnificent work, though. It's just an extraordinary work because it's got so many different elements in it.
And Tansy, do you have...
look, there are lots of works that I really love. I really love John Brack's Salandra, which is a beautiful modernist work. And, you know, Brack is such an important artist, obviously, but not known for his floral portraits. And I think that's what's really interesting about his work. But then I love the contemporary works as well. I mean, I love Christian Thompson's work. I think it's so evocative and so important. And people like Tracy Moffat as well, the way that, you know, sort of using floral emblems in a way to reclaim culture. And I think that's a really fascinating story.
Well, I think that's, in this, we're talking about a history here, and in the flows of that history and the patterns of that history, the flowers, the natural world is now becoming to represent something quite strong, quite powerful for a lot of artists.
Yeah. Well, I think we've gone from, say, the Victorian era, where we had a whole language of flowers and people understood the symbolism behind each flower and what a particular flower in a painting would mean. We've sort of probably lost that, where the flower became a lot about form and colour and texture, to now rereading that symbolism, but a new symbolism, a sort of not that idea of love and loss and of the kind of romantic Victorian era, but now symbolism of culture, politics, all of those really big issues that we're discussing in society at the moment.
Well, it is a beautiful book, a credit to the flower, a credit to art, and a credit to your relationships. Thank you so very much for coming in and chewing it over.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much indeed.
Penelope Curtin and Tansy Curtin, the team behind this wonderful new book, it will leap out at you in shops. Blooms and Brushstrokes, A Floral History of Australian Art, published by Wakefield Press.